Our next case this morning is number 043154, Xavier Valdez against Steiner Corporation. Mr. Hostica.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Brian Hostica. I'm the attorney for the plaintiff appellant Javier Valdez and his claim against Steiner Corporation pursuant to the Americans with Disabilities Act. This is an appeal of the District Court's grant of summary judgment in favor of Steiner Corporation and denial of Mr. Valdez's motion for summary judgment.
Mr. Hostica, let me ask you a question that at least strikes me as fairly central. I'm trying to put together the first footnote of the District Court's opinion where the Court notes that Mr. Valdez did not support his responses under Local Rule 56.1 as he should have done. And I'm wondering how, if at all, you attempted to counter in a way the District Court was able to take cognizance of the results of this functional capacity evaluation that were done in, you know, I guess October, November 2000. All these things, you know, function at medium, heavy level, 70-pound maximum lift, et cetera, et cetera. You know, did Mr. Valdez contest the accuracy of the results of that test?
No, he didn't contest the accuracy of that test, Your Honor. However, the Americans with Disabilities Act does not define a disability with reference to one's ability to perform work-related tasks.
Well, but I guess the next question, though, is the Supreme Court, particularly in the Toyota case, has made it quite clear that to be, quote, disabled means more than not being able to do a particular job or set of jobs. It's really these very basic life functions, you know, breathing, walking, whatever. It's a small list. And so the question is, if the functional capacity evaluation is correct, how can he meet the Supreme Court's definition of disabled?
Functional capacity evaluation tested Mr. Valdez's capacity to perform work-related tasks.
Well, I know, but if you can lift 70 pounds and climb a ladder for 30 minutes and do things like that, how can you be so limited in any particular major life activity that you would qualify under the Supreme Court's test?
Well, I think these major life activities are mutually exclusive. If you can lift 70 pounds, that doesn't mean that necessarily mean that you're not substantially limited in your ability to walk.
Well, am I correct that it's the ability to walk that's your principal focus?
Yes, Your Honor.
Because the test said that you could walk on a treadmill for 150 minutes. I don't know what to make of that, but again, I'm just trying to find out from you, where are the disputed issues of fact on the question relating to disability?
The functional capacity evaluation says that he could walk that distance with frequent breaks, Your Honor. The Supreme Court in Toyota said that it did have a very narrow definition of these major life activities, and among them is walking. And there's two chapters of disability in this case, Your Honor. There's chapter pre-surgery and there's chapter post-surgery. And the defendant's discrimination occurred throughout both chapters. The functional capacity evaluation occurred in chapter post-surgery. Mm-hmm. And Steiner's whole defense to all of these assertions of reasonable accommodations that we've made is that Mr. Valdez, well, he's not disabled, so we don't have any obligation to accommodate him. That's their fallback.
I guess we can ask Steiner this, but it seems that they've abandoned the ground on which the district court relied, which was that there was no reasonable accommodation.
Yes, Judge.
Okay.
Yes, Judge. And we believe that we identified five areas where he could have been reasonably accommodated to allow him to work, and yet the district court referred to only three. And our appeal is centered on those reasonable accommodations that the court did not consider, as well as the one area of reasonable accommodations where Judge Gottschall dismissed, as well as a claim for harassment in a hostile work environment that was not addressed by the district court. The first issue in this case is whether restructuring a disabled employee's job, which does not eliminate any essential functions, is evidence of a reasonable accommodation
Well, could we just go back to disability for a minute? Because
yes,
it seems to me if the gist of Steiner's argument now is that he really wasn't disabled, an appellee, of course, is entitled to try to support a judgment based on anything that was properly presented to the court below. So to that extent, it maybe doesn't matter, but that's why I'm trying to get at where, you know, what evidence on your side would create the genuine issue of material fact with respect to his disability?
The record is replete, Your Honor, with independent evidence from independent lay evidence, independent medical evidence, that Mr. Valadez had lots of trouble walking. Some witnesses testified that he could barely move. Some said he walked like a baby. Some that knew him well said he never walked like that. They feared for his safety because he was forced to walk up four flights of stairs when they knew he couldn't get down the stairs if there was an emergency, and he was sent to the most dangerous place in the plant to work. And there's also independent medical evidence, despite the spin that the defendant's doctor will put on what other doctors have said. The neurosurgeon, the one neurosurgeon that operated out of Mr. Valadez, opened up his back and saw a herniated disc. And I know this isn't evidence that he can't walk, but, I mean, they saw the problems that he has had throughout when the defendant is claiming that he's faking. And then they fused his spine together to correct this mm-hmm. problem that has been lingering since he was injured on the job over a year before.
After he had that back surgery, could he drive himself to work and feed himself and dress himself and perform basic functions?
He could drive himself to work. He could dress himself. Beyond that, I'm not sure what it is you're referring to, Your Honor.
How much did his doctor authorize him to do after that surgery?
The final restrictions. I'm sorry, Judge. The final restrictions that ultimately led to his termination were that he could drive 4 hours a day, and that he could lift up to 40 pounds. So he could drive, and he could lift. Why he couldn't perform his former job was just a matter of degree. I mean, he can't drive 8 to 12 hours a day, and he can't lift 200-pound bags of linen. But, I mean, he just approached his employer and said, look, I can't do these things. Could we reduce these essential functions of my job and increase the essential functions that I had before I was injured, and that's troubleshooting with clients and supervising other routemen? That's what he approached them with, but he never received any response because there was no interactive process whatsoever. The defendant did not want him to return to work. Well, the ADA at Section 12.111.9b lists several reasonable accommodations that an employer should consider, and the first on that list is job restructuring. Judge Gottschall dismissed restructuring by saying that the ADA does not mandate restructuring, and she cites two cases in which an employer discussed restructuring with the employee and then ruled it out because the employee wanted the elimination of essential functions. But that's not the case here. Those cases are not applicable because Mr. Valadez didn't want the elimination of an essential function. He just wanted it reduced, and there's evidence as to the feasibility of that idea because the first floor supervisor at the plant, who was in charge of all 36 route men, thought that was an option, that they could take advantage of his good people skills. But he never got to square one because he never got anyone to interact with him about what he wanted. The second issue is one not addressed by the district court, and that is whether a vacant dock supervisor position is evidence of a reasonable accommodation for a injured former supervisor who's restricted in driving and lifting, where this position does not require driving and lifting. The Seventh Circuit has clearly established that if these vacant positions exist for which a disabled employee is qualified and capable of performing, then the employer should offer that as an accommodation. I see my time is up. If I have any time remaining,
yeah. You have a minute left. You may want to save it.
Okay, yeah, I'd like to save that for rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honors.
We'll hear now from Mr. Teplinski.
May it please the Court. My name is Howard Teplinski on behalf of the appellee. We believe that this case can be affirmed on two very independent grounds, Your Honor. One is a position that we did advance in the district court, and that's that Mr. Valadez was not disabled. Judge Gottschall's order granting summary judgment was basically based on the second ground that we advance, and that he's not a qualified individual under the statute.
Now, on the second point, I find it hard to reconcile that. If we assume for the sake of argument for the moment that he was disabled, your response to interrogatory number 136, which states the dock supervisor position was a position that the plaintiff could perform, and it goes on, he was qualified as a supervisor, response, admit, and you admit that Valadez, a route driver, was already performing other light-duty work. So it seems to me the district court, if you're just looking at alternatives that would be suitable for Mr. Valadez, had an important omission.
Well, the interesting issue there, Your Honor, is the timing. And the timing is such that this vacant dock supervisor position became available shortly after the results of Mr. Valadez's functional capacity evaluation.
But all I'm saying is that's your segue back into, is he really disabled?
Correct.
I understand that as a separate argument. And as you just said, you have two arguments. But if you assume that there was a genuine issue of material fact, even after the functional capacity evaluation, on whether he's disabled, and you say, given that it's summary judgment, you give him the benefit of the doubt, you assume he is disabled, then this dock supervisor position becomes legally important. Now, you know, I'm sure you're prepared to argue that he wasn't disabled, maybe he was never disabled, whatever you want to argue, but I'm just saying analytically this is a different point, and given that position, it's a problem with the rationale that the district court used.
Well, analytically, Your Honor, you're correct. It is a different point, and it would be a far different scenario, I believe, at least raising an issue of material fact, if that position became available 2 years before.
But even when it did become available, if he was disabled as of October, November 2000, when Lorraine, whoever she is, gets the job, then there could be an accommodation problem here if he was disabled.
If he was disabled, I don't think
there is a... So that really takes you back to your first argument. I think that's where your case is centered.
And I don't think there is a factual dispute that at least as of that period of time, Mr. Valadez was not disabled. Regardless of whether Mr. Valadez responded to the statements of fact in the Rule 56 motion properly, one thing is absolutely certain, and that's that there was never any disagreement as to the results of that functional capacity evaluation. And there is no set of scenarios, even pre-Toyota, Your Honor, that would define his ability to lift 70 pounds and to walk for 150 minutes on the treadmill and to push and pull a 300-pound cart as someone being disabled. And, Your Honor, based on that, my client, Mr. Valadez, his doctors, all concerned, didn't perceive that he had a disability at that point. Rather, they perceived that the results of the functional capacity evaluation were what they were and that he could, in fact, perform those tasks. However, his ability to and by the way, he was also released by his own physician at that period of time with an ability to perform in accordance with the functional capacity evaluation.
He alleges that there is all sorts of failure to cooperate, though, on Steiner's part with these various limitations that were placed on him.
Well, he alleges that, Your Honor. We don't believe that it was factually supported in the record. I'm not going to attempt to raise any material factual issues here by disputing those. What I can say, Your Honor, is that things like, actually getting back to the walking issue, he was given a sweeper position. He was asked to perform his position on the fourth floor. He didn't object to the fact that he had to walk around and sweep. What he objected to the fact that he had to work in conditions where lots and lots and lots of other employees at Steiner Corporation had to work. It was not a good place to be to work. It was hot. It was vermin infested. This is a industrial linen. This was a industrial linen facility. The facility has since closed, and a new facility has opened.
That's reassuring.
But it wasn't a pleasant place for anyone to work. And interestingly, all of the evidence to that point was from the testimony of former employees who also all testified that they weren't treated well there. They were darn glad that they weren't there any longer. I guess if we were to characterize what happened at as it being a place of equal opportunity offenders, perhaps it was. And there was certainly no evidence that he was being discriminated against on the basis of disability. We certainly believe that there is no evidence, no competent evidence in the record, based on Toyota and based on the other cases, including the dicta in the Mays case, that Judge Posner attempt to set aside the fact that back injuries do not in and of themselves equate to disability. Mr. Valadez was not disabled. We don't believe he was disabled. He could not perform the essential functions of his job at any point during this process by his own admission. He couldn't lift hundreds of pounds, which is what was required as a route driver and as an assistant district manager. He could never do that. He could not drive for 8 to 12 hour shifts. He could never do that by his own admission. Forgetting about the doubts that physicians
may have. Well, that's why this is an accommodation case. I mean, he's not saying that, as you say, that he could still do the old job, but the duty to accommodate can involve, as your opponent pointed out, job restructuring and the like.
Without the elimination, however, of essential functions of his job, and really, it may be a question of semantics. I don't believe so. Restructuring mm-hmm. is really the same thing as creating a new job in this instance. There's no requirement in the ADA to do that, and I'll be happy to answer any additional questions anyone may have. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I believe you have 1 minute left, sir.
Well, I would just like to say that maybe Steiner didn't believe that Mr. Valadez was injured. So then they take it upon themselves to put him to the test and completely ignore the most reasonable accommodations that could ever be available to an employer that calls somebody back to work, and that's follow the restrictions that you're aware that he's been put on. And that was never done. There were accommodations that could have been made to this man, and there was no effort to do so. There was a refusal to discuss things with him because he was damaged goods and they didn't want him working for him anymore. And that's the crux of this case. And we're asking that the district court's grant of summary judgment be reversed and summary judgment be granted in Mr. Valadez's favor because Steiner has never directly addressed the evidence that we have regarding Mr. Valadez's limitation on his ability to walk and perform manual tasks. Thank you.
Our thanks both to Mr. Hostica and to Mr. Teplinski for their fine oral arguments, and the case will be taken under advisement. The court has completed the call of the morning, and therefore the court will rise until 9:30 tomorrow morning.